I have to go upstairs and record something again, so...
Quiet.
Do not...
smash anything.
And do not disturb.
Do not disturb.
Do not come into your room.
You're listening to Pandemic, a podcast from RTE News and Current Affairs on the COVID-19 crisis. I'm Colm O'Mungoyne, and each week I'll be talking to RTE's correspondents, reporters and others to bring you news, updates and analysis you can trust. We can guarantee you a high quality of information. Sound quality, on the other hand, might vary somewhat. The correspondents and I will be recording this in many cases on mobile devices from home, so please do bear with us. It's Thursday, April 15th, episode 84 of Pandemic, and today we're going to look at Hungary, which is using seven different vaccines. These include AstraZeneca, Pfizer-BioNTech, Moderna, Sputnik, Chinese vaccines Sinopharm and Convedica, and the Indian vaccine Covishield. It is administering over 80,000 doses daily. So since the start of this month alone, over 1 million doses have been administered. More than 4 million Hungarians have got their first dose of the vaccine, and over 1 million people have been fully vaccinated. So that's higher than the figure you're going to hear in the upcoming discussion. So apologies for that, but we just wanted to clarify just how widespread the vaccine rollout has been in Hungary at the outset. Now, despite this record, thousands of cases of COVID-19 are being recorded every day, and hundreds of deaths are being recorded daily as well. So what's happening? Kata Korath is a science journalist and documentary maker who wrote late last year in the British Medical Journal about Hungary's handling of the COVID crisis. She's up next. Okay, Kata, thank you very much for speaking to the podcast. Much appreciated.
You're very welcome.
You are a journalist. You are a documentary maker. You are Hungarian. Would you like to plug what you're doing at the moment? Give a bit of promotion for what work you're carrying out just now as we speak?
Sure. So basically, I'm a freelance journalist specialized in science, mostly in environment, but I'm also a documentary filmmaker. And one of my latest documentary include Ecuador's Hidden Treasure, which is about female scientists working in the Ecuadorian rainforest. And it seems like I will do another documentary about Hungary, but it will still remain secret.
Okay, all right. Well, that will keep everybody guessing and hopefully eagerly anticipating whatever your next piece of output is. But you are, as you say, a freelance science journalist, and you do keep an eye on what's going on in Hungary. And as we look at the pandemic at the moment, Hungary has a very high vaccination rate relative to its population. I think it has a population of just over 9 million. It has distributed around 3 million vaccination doses, and yet daily death rates are still up as far as the last figure I checked was for the 12th of April, was over 800. So how did we get to where we are today is what we're going to cover in our chat with you. Can we begin at the beginning? When the pandemic hit Hungary, how is it treated? How seriously was it treated? And what message was given to the public by the authorities?
Roughly, the pandemic hit Hungary around end of February, beginning of March of 2020. And to be honest, the government immediately reacted and very soon closed borders and instructed that only Hungarians can enter the country, or even tourists, if they come, they have to be in quarantine. And basically installed a lot of relatively hard-handed measures, it seemed like. There were curfews and restrictions of mobility. Basically, it seemed like people were very scared of an Italy-like scenario. So what I heard is most people kept at their homes, and cell phone data also suggested, that's what people told me, that especially in Budapest, which is the most populated city, basically everybody stayed home and abide to the measures, and it seemed like it was working. There were very, very low number of infections. Testing was not too high either, but some of the healthcare workers I talked with told me that basically there was no requirement for that because the low number of positive cases from testing didn't really point to the need for higher testing.
So in terms of health resources, because in Ireland, the big fear was our intensive care beds, our supply of intensive care beds was a big worry. If we had a large number of ill people, particularly older people who might need intensive care treatment, our intensive care units could become quite quickly overwhelmed, and scenes like in Italy would be repeated in Ireland, where doctors would have to make traumatic choices between who should get a ventilator and who should not get a ventilator. And it led to a certain degree of concern or debate around how much of an investment had been made in the health service historically, and what would that look like after the pandemic. What was the state of play with the health service in Hungary?
So sadly, healthcare system in Hungary is one of the worst in the EU, largely due to the fact that the government spending has been declining for ever since the fall of the Soviet Union, basically. So it didn't start with this government. The share of the GDP for the healthcare spending declined from previous administrations too, but it did reach an all-time low in 2019 with about 4.41% of the GDP, which is basically one of the lowest in Europe. If you put it in contrast with the UK, it spent 7.98% of its gross domestic product that year. And also the infrastructure system in most public hospitals, especially in the countryside, is very outdated. But the biggest problem is basically the lack of staff, especially specialized nurses and doctors. So even though the Hungarian government purchased, I think, about 16,000 ventilators last year, officially, according to union numbers, there are only about 2,000 doctors and 2,000 intensive care nurses in the country who are able to operate them. And this really shows right now, because the Hungarian medical chamber, which is the highest professional authority in regards of medical care in Hungary, released a statement saying that up to 95% of intensive care unit patients who are on ventilators die in some cases. The government acknowledged that about 80% in average in the rest of the country. So basically, who goes on ventilator is not likely to survive, because there's about one specialized intensive care nurse for five patients in some hospitals.
And so, as you mentioned at the outset, when the first wave of the pandemic hit, because of very draconian lockdown measures within Hungary and tight border security and restrictions on travel and everything else, there were very low numbers. So was the health system tested or stretched in the first phase, or was there a sense that Hungary had come through the crisis after the first wave and an eagerness then to open up for economic reasons?
Sure. So the first wave was very strange, because what I can say that even though the government did implement some strict measures, they were like very strangely light in other cases. People were still allowed to go to funerals and markets and hairdressers. I remember my mother went to one and I was like, why did you go? Don't go.
To a market or a hairdresser? Or yeah. Both? Or both?
Then there was a very controversial order to free up to 60% of hospital beds in all of the country, which many people, including healthcare professionals, didn't really understand, but the government was preparing for the worst case scenario. And then, because people really took it seriously during the first wave, that's what many doctors told me, that basically Hungarians themselves were so afraid that they really kept these measures. The numbers were kept very low, so the government were very positive about the situation. And basically, by the end of May, beginning of June, they almost completely reopened the country and the borders, and people were allowed to go to Lake Balaton, which is like a very popular holiday spot for Hungarians, or Croatia. And very soon, almost according to a textbook, by the end of August, numbers begin to rise again. But to answer to your original question, during the first wave, basically because so many beds were freed up in hospitals, especially in those ones that are mostly therapeutic places, doctors and nurses didn't have enough patients in most places. Also, many of the surgeries were delayed, postponed, rescheduled for a later time. So in the first wave, healthcare professionals were worried about their income because basically most of them have really low salaries compared to European Union standards. So people usually have 2-3 jobs to have enough income. So it was a strange time for healthcare workers.
And do you mean 2 or 3 jobs in hospitals? They would work in several different facilities as doctors. Is it doing a mix of private and public work or
yes.
Right?
Yes, doing a mix of private and public work or purposely doing overtime, basically. So they are signing up that I want to do overtime because they would get extra money for doing overtime.
And so the second wave hits Hungary over the summer. By that stage, there are at least signs of hope on the horizon come August that vaccines may be coming, and that becomes the next stage in the narrative of most countries, that people look forward to the beginning of 2021 in the knowledge that there are some vaccines coming down the track. Now, Hungary didn't just stick to the central procurement of the European Union. It also looked to China and Russia to purchase vaccines as well.
Exactly. Hungary was the first and still the only country, basically, who is using the Russian Sputnik V vaccine massively. Some of the Chinese vaccines, including Sinopharm and Sinovac. By now, it has vaccinated over 3 million people. But you have to understand that this includes those who only get one shot so far. So the government decided, I think about yesterday, that when we reach 3.5 million people, they will start lifting some of the restrictions. They already did a little bit. So one of the biggest ones is from Monday, primary schools and kindergartens can reopen, and they plan for the same for secondary schools from about the 10th of May. Meanwhile, the terraces of restaurants and bars can reopen as soon as the country reaches 3.5 million vaccinated people. But as I said before, this doesn't mean that they are fully vaccinated.
Right. So they've distributed over 3 million doses so far, but they haven't double dosed over 3 million people. People are in partially vaccinated and with a mix of vaccines. So, I mean, it would beg the question, why are daily case rates and indeed even daily death rates in Hungary so high when they have distributed so many doses of the vaccines and restrictions are still quite tight?
I believe most of these infections are because people are tired in terms of restrictions. So there are strict restrictions since about November. So some of the cases are of people who secretly get together, especially right now that was Easter time. And even though healthcare workers beg people not to celebrate Easter, it is very important for Hungarians. And then among the people I know, they do meet more or less. They try to keep it to themselves, but still, the other reason is, I think, due to hospital-related infections. People who get to hospitals, the system is overwhelmed right now. So basically, this also contributes to the infection rates.
You wrote an article, and the reason, I suppose, it's worth saying that the reason we're speaking is back in November, you wrote an article in the British Medical Journal, which I read. But one of the things that you concentrated on in that was testing. So is that still a factor in Hungary's response? The level of testing that's going on, discovering where the virus is in the country and tracking it down and trying to take measures to track, trace and isolate people.
Yes. So testing is really increased. And in some places, I think local municipalities really took a lead about increasing testing measures. As far as I read, for example, in a city in the south of Hungary, half of the community was infected, who they tested. So I think this is also really contributes to the fact that the daily case number, newly confirmed case numbers are so high.
Okay, so the confirmation is actually in a way indicative of the success of the testing and tracing rather than the actual disease being any higher in the community, do you think?
It's a little bit hard to say, but basically compared to other European numbers, like 5,300 cases was the today number I checked, which is almost 2,000 higher than the day before. So it is basically due to testing. Also, the other fact is people are now more aware of this. So testing is still a little bit complicated. Like, I know from my own family that sometimes, like, officially testing is free if you call, but testing only can be done through an ambulance, and they cannot really come out most of the time. So some of the cases, they just recommend you to go to quarantine, and other cases they say, okay, you can do testing, but if you are not so sick, you have to go to the testing place. But sometimes the testing place, for example, in case of my parents who live in the countryside, was an hour away. So they opted for private testing, which is very expensive for Hungarian standards. It can cost about $70. I don't know how much is that in euros. And then...
Yeah, it's about 60 euro off the top of my head, which is pretty hefty fee for a test.
Yeah, it is for the PCR test. It's not for the antigen test, but still. And then most of these people cannot afford it. So they wait for that. And then I'm guessing they go to the testing places, which are also overwhelmed. But both places, both private and public, have to report it. But the numbers, which is one of the complaints of the Hungarian Medical Chamber, are for the whole country. So they are not necessarily detailed by region, which would be very helpful for the distribution of testing and care and vaccines and all the other things. So it is complicated.
Finally then, Viktor Orban himself, he's a controversial figure in Europe. His party has recently parted ways with the European People's Party over his attitudes to media freedom, amongst other things. How do you think he has been viewed internally in Hungary, and his handling of the pandemic, how has it played for him politically?
So it is interesting, because just recently there was a survey about this, and basically people who are usually government supporters, they believe that the government has so far handled the situation quite well, even regarding death numbers, which is kind of strange, because basically compared to the population, Hungary has one of the highest death ratios in Europe.
It's about, what is it, over 23,000 people have died out of about 750,000 cases. Over 23,000 people have died in Hungary, and that's out of a population of 9 million.
Pretty much. So, meanwhile, the government is also using the situation to kind of campaign against the opposition, claiming that they are anti-vax people, which is totally untrue. The opposition parties mainly are calling for regulation, basically because Hungary is the only country in the EU using both the Russian and Chinese vaccines without the European bodies, medical bodies' approval. They just ask for these vaccines to be approved by the European Medicine Agency. But the government is basically using this argument as a way to label them as anti-vaccination. But it is very expected, because Hungary is going to general elections next year.
So maybe too soon to say what the fallout is so far ahead of the election, and I suppose so far ahead of the end of the crisis, maybe. Okay, Kata Korat, thank you very much for speaking to us. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
You're very welcome. Thank you for talking to me.
All the best. And that's it for another episode, which was a bit of a sobering and cautionary tale on how vaccines and tight restrictions alone don't necessarily provide the silver bullet in tackling case rates and deaths from the virus. We're back with more next week. Until then, take care, stay safe. Thanks for listening.